Good evening, folks. Whenever you're ready, I'd like to call the June 7th meeting of the Tompkins County Legislature to order. Would you join me in the Pledge of Allegiance?
The United States of America, and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call of members.
Ms. McAfee?
Yes, here.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne? Mr. McKenna? Mr. Proto?
Here.
Ms. Pryor?
Here.
Mr. Robinson?
Here.
Mr. Shinagawa?
Here.
Mr. Stein has asked to be excused. Mr. Burbank?
Here.
Ms. Chalk?
I'm here.
Mr. Dennis?
Here.
Ms. Herrera has also asked to be excused. Ms. Keeper?
Present.
Mr. Lane?
Here.
Ms. Robertson?
Here.
13 members present.
Proclamations, petitions, communications, and notices.
Communications are on the desks.
And I have a proclamation, and I think John Spence is here to collect it from Better Housing for Tompkins County. Come on up, John. Whereas Better Housing for Tompkins County Incorporated was established in 1981 to provide affordable housing to Tompkins County residents of low and moderate income, and whereas in the 30 years since then, Better Housing has diligently sought to achieve its goals with programs for first-time homebuyers, housing rehabilitation and home repair, the unique Elder Cottage Housing Options, ECHO program, property development and management, and many other supportive and imaginative projects, always demonstrating an ability to grow as the needs of local residents have changed. And whereas hundreds of Tompkins County families are assisted each year through the agency's ongoing commitment to the preservation and creation of affordable housing, and whereas numerous community agencies, businesses, and individuals support affordable housing in Tompkins County by partnering with Better Housing programs and or contributing financially to the agency, and whereas Better Housing for Tompkins County Incorporated recognizes that every Tompkins County resident deserves to live with dignity and is dedicated to increasing sustainable, secure, and affordable housing options for rural residents through construction, education, and advocacy, now, therefore, I, Martha Robertson, Chair of the Tompkins County Legislature, do hereby recognize and congratulate Better Housing for Tompkins County Incorporated for 30 years of success, helping hands and hearts, which will be acknowledged at a public celebration and annual meeting on June 15, 2011. Congratulations. Thank you.
And thank you all. There are many people in this room that have been supportive, I think, for those 30 years.
Why are you looking at me?
Because you're the guy. So, again, much appreciated. The amount of work, I've spent a lot of time in the last week and a half going through the old files, and the name is kind of a, names that pop up are kind of a who's who in Tompkins County. So I wish they were all here, and I wish they would all come on the 15th at 5 o'clock up to La Terrelle to enjoy I'll buy you a libation for our 30th birthday party. But for those that are in the room and for those who are not in the room, we greatly appreciate the support of this body. So, appreciate it. Cool.
I need to ask for an executive session to discuss personnel matters at the end of this meeting, and we may be reordering business to accommodate staff who are here. I have several people signed up to speak under public privilege of the floor. You have a three-minute time limit, and Kath will help you to keep time. If anybody wishes to speak who hasn't signed up, you just wait till I get after these folks, and you'll have a chance. First is Laurie Kowinski, and then Bruder Ritz-Deutsch.
Good evening. My name is Laurie Kowinski. I'm a resident of the city of Ithaca at 302 Cascadilla Street, and I work with Catholic Charities here in town, and as such, I am a member of the Tompkins County Immigrant Rights Coalition. So some of us are here tonight to speak to you about the issue of secure communities, which you may have already heard about. But if not, we wanted to give you a little overview. We know that the name secure community sounds really good. We all would like to live in a community that's secure. But This is a program of the Department of Homeland Security, and specifically of Immigration and Customs Enforcement, which we feel has been really denying people their basic civil rights. It's a program in which the federal government is asking local police and county police to serve really as their arm, that when people are arrested and booked, their fingerprints really are sent through a Immigration and Customs Enforcement database to check on their immigration status. We're told that the reason for this is to find the really dangerous criminals among us, but in reality, since this program has started about a year and a half ago, the people who are being quote-unquote caught by this, most of them have no criminal background at all, no criminal record at all. We know this is just simply tearing up families, some of whom have U.S.-born kids, deporting people who are hardworking members of our society trying to make a living in a really difficult global economy, and in the meantime, not really making us any safer. It's also an unfunded mandate. When a local county or local municipality's police department runs those fingerprints, they have to hold that person until ICE, Immigration Customs Enforcement, tells them what to do. So that's an unfunded mandate, which is one reason why a lot of local police are not in favor of this. And we have heard that our own sheriff also does not like this idea. Moreover, we know that immigrant communities will be all the less likely to cooperate with police as witnesses or in any sort of capacity when there's this extra fear, whether or not they have documents, that they could get scooped up in this. So for these many reasons, our Governor Cuomo has suspended the program here in New York just recently, this last week. We hope that soon you will be presented with a resolution asking him to rescind the program. That is, to take it one more step and really say we as a state, particularly a state of immigrants, New York State, do not want to be part of this program at all. Not just sort of temporarily step out of it, but to really say we want something better, and we hope that something better will eventually be comprehensive immigration reform. But until that happens, we don't want this kind of program in New York State. So I urge you, like I said, we hope that this resolution will be coming to you this month. We urge you to support it in the name of all those things, fiscal responsibility and civil rights. Thank you.
Thank you. Jutta Ritz-Deutsch and then Rick Norfolk.
Hi, my name is Jutta Ritz-Deutsch. I also live in the city of Ithaca, and I'm, as Lori, with the Tompkins County Immigrant Rights Coalition. I'm also the coordinator of the Ithaca branch of Amnesty International. So for me, this is very much a human rights issue. I also believe that immigrant rights will be an important civil rights issue of this decade. Now, to set this in a little larger perspective, we're precisely fighting these types of enforcement policies because Congress has failed to give us comprehensive immigration reform. So it's one thing to say we're going to create quote-unquote secure communities, but if in fact we're deporting people who are just here trying to support their families, it's a wrong-headed approach. It sends fear through the communities. Every single year, about 10,000 U.S. citizen kids lose one or both parents to deportations. Think about that for a minute. That's 30 every single day. Okay, 30 kids lose their parents. What about their rights? What about their right to life and liberty and pursuit of happiness? Right. So last year we deported 400,000 people, and this cost us $5 billion. And that's just to deport people. Another $2 billion to detain them before we deport them. Right? So it's in the larger scheme of things, this enforcement-only approach is a real, real problem. Now, you may say Governor Cuomo has, you know, announced this as suspension, and as Lori pointed out, it's not the same as rescinding the program. And you might think, okay, that's fine enough. We don't have to step up and speak out on this, but I think right now is precisely the time to step up and speak out on this. Governor Cuomo took a courageous move. He is going to take backlash for all of this, and I think it's important that we take a stand on civil rights for all New Yorkers. We circulated some handouts. One of them is a viewpoint in the journal that came out today. That I authored. You can get a little bit more background information there as well. It's a very urgent issue, and Lori, I would also like to urge you to pass a resolution and support the governor in this move and to encourage him to rescind the program altogether.
Thank you, Yuta. Rick Norald.
Good evening, Madam Chair, esteemed members of the legislature. My name is Rick Norald. I'm the legislative and political coordinator for CSEA Central Region 5. We encompass 20 counties in Region 5, one of those counties being Tompkins. I'm here to speak to you on behalf of our region president, Colleen Wheaton. And I'm here to speak to you about a service that this county provides, and that service is the CHA. It has come to our attention that there's been an issue regarding burdens in this county, and there's been an issue regarding certain people being a burden upon this county. I don't believe that anyone in this county is a burden. I don't believe that you believe that anyone is a burden, because if we go down that road, you're all a burden. The folks that partake of the CHA are a burden because, heaven forbid, they need the services. So they're a burden. The taxpayers, the citizens, we're all a burden when we start going down that road. I don't believe you feel that way. I know that you have been proactive in this county on many issues and that our members are willing and ready to work with you to look for the savings and to keep this service viable. We ask you, as we move ahead here and that this discussion goes forward, to please think about what it is that this community is all about. Think about what it is that Tompkins County has always stood for. Think about what you want to be moving forward. Forget all the hype. Forget everything that's popular these days and buzzwords and what might be the right thing to say or wrong thing to say. Think with your heart. And think about what's important and what's important to you to continue to provide to the citizens of Tompkins County, because they're not a burden. And our members who are your employees sure are not a burden. We're all taking care of one another, and I think you want to continue to do that. So we ask you to think long and think hard as we move forward on this discussion. Thank you for your time, and keep thinking.
Thank you. Would anyone else like to address the legislature? I don't have anybody else signed up. All right, legislators. Dooley.
Madam Chair, I don't usually get out of my chair for privilege of the floor for legislators, but I need to address you in particular because you have been a member of this legislature for a long time now. You've survived. You've thrived, and I have a certificate to give you in honor of that. Certificate of appreciation awarded to Martha Robertson in recognition of 10 years of outstanding service to Tompkins County.
Thank you, Tooley. Oh, no. That's a great surprise. Thank you, Tooley. Anyone else?
Want me to hold that for you, Martha?
That's right. I'll put it next to your 25, Frank. Nathan.
Yes, I will be. I don't know when the right opportunity for me to actually bring this up will be, but I actually plan to when we make changes to the agenda. But I just wanted to let you know what I'm doing it for. Basically, I'm going to ask that we add to the agenda the resolution requesting introduction of home rule legislation amending Section 603 of the Retirement and Social Security Law in relation to service retirement benefits and disability benefits for certain detective investigators with 20 years service without regard to age. And I'd like to bring that back. At the last legislature meeting, due to the school board vote, I had to leave the meeting early because the polls open after I leave for work every day. And so I was not able to vote on this legislation, and I would like the opportunity to, and so I would appreciate it if my colleagues would allow me that chance. Thank you.
And that is in your packet, I believe. I hope everybody can find it. That's the DA's position. Thank you, Nathan. What, Pam?
Well, isn't there a place further down here where we can add things? I mean, because I have something that
I
want to
add
too.
Okay. Under I'll motion, you know, when I ask for motions, resolutions to be added to or withdrawn from, but that's not usually a time when we discuss it. I think Nathan was just explaining why he was bringing it back.
Okay. Thanks.
All right. Okay. Frank, then Carol.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Congratulations on your 10 years. I just wanted to thank those of you that were able to participate in the Memorial Day ceremonies at DeWitt, at the park, at the cemeteries, in Dryden at the parade, and in Trumansburg at the parade, we had a pretty good turnout, and the weather cooperated. So I just like to say thanks on behalf of all of us that also participated. Thank you.
Thank you, Carol.
Yeah, I just, as I have all along, want to keep you up to date on the Tompkins County Council of Governments Task Force on Gas Drilling, in particular the work of the subcommittee that is called a work group that I chair, which is looking specifically at how we might, as counties and municipal governments, be preparing in terms of our tax assessment roles, making sure that we keep them equitable and fair, and some other economic development considerations. And it's gotten a lot of press lately, so I wanted to make sure to just mention that tonight. Some of you may have seen it. And we have interest on the part of New York State, various offices, both political and administrative and executive, in hearing some more about what folks in Tompkins County, our committee, some folks from the towns, representatives from local lending institutions, real estate attorneys, appraisers have had to say. And we're specifically asking New York State to look into requiring drilling regulations to meet the requirements of the secondary mortgage market. It was appalling to find out that nobody had looked at that, and that New York State, as opposed to many other states that that already are more familiar with drilling, may have had conflicts across our own agencies related to setbacks from dwellings that would literally could have impacted and put a real damper in the whole mortgage market, the ability to make mortgage loans and refinancing to people who have properties. We're asking that they apply setback requirements to ancillary activities in addition to wells, which New York State doesn't do, to require the recording of full lease information by companies, including the renewals and memoranda involved with those leases, within 30 days. Our local assessment office needs that. We can't accurately assess property if we don't know what the lease information is. The banks need it to make loans. The real estate attorneys need it. The property owners need it. And the realtors need it. And we're specifically asking that the formulas that New York State uses to value the production of gas output be adjusted. It hasn't been done since the 1970s with a very different kind of drilling, and nobody had looked at that. Those are immediate things that could be done. There is a website. If you go to the TCOG, Tompkins County Council of Governments, and look at the task force, there are web pages for each of those work groups, and all the documents that have been in the press that we've been talking about and that I'm reading from right now are posted there. So please feel free to peruse and ask me other questions if you'd like. Thank you.
Thank you, Carol. Anyone else? Pam.
Thank you.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, Leslyn, Pam, Will. I better start writing them down.
All right. I'm bringing the fun. It's a little somber around here today. What's going on? It's the season for festivals, I take it. From all appearances, the Ithaca Festival was a resounding success. So congratulations to them. I want to make sure that you all are invited. Come next Saturday, we are celebrating, are continuing the celebration of our eccentricities and our culture, our history in this community with the annual GIEC Festival, Saturday the 11th in the 300 block of West Court Street. And following that, and I'll say it now, on the 18th is the Juneteenth celebration. Juneteenth being the oldest known celebration of the final emancipation of slaves in these United States. So we want to make sure that you have it on your calendars, and we'll try to show a face or pitch in, roll up your sleeves, help, volunteer, see me. Yeah, we can use it. So thank you all for letting me bring some fun and smile, everybody. It's okay. Sun is shining.
Thank you, Leslyn. Pam, Will, and Nathan.
Well, Leslyn sort of stole my fire, but...
Oh, sorry.
You know, no, that's okay.
Here, cover back.
Thank you. I just wanted to say that the Ithaca Festival this weekend was a huge success. I was talking to somebody, and they had over 400 groups apply to be in the parade on Thursday night. It feels like everybody wants to be in the parade, and sometimes it looked like everybody was in the parade, but it was just incredibly well attended, and it's a wonderful, wonderful event. And it's funny, because the parade in particular, there were lots of Ithaca people there, but there were a lot of people who are not from Ithaca who come to this festival, and I think that is a wonderful testament to this festival and what is done there every year. So I just wanted to congratulate the people who organized that event this year.
And who got the weather to cooperate.
And the weather cooperate.
That's right. Nathan? I'm sorry, Will.
Thank you, Martha. One last thing on the Ithaca Festival. I, too, was just blown away by the parade, as I am every year. And what really, really amazes me is this is where you can see the full diversity of our community on display. People who have interests and concerns and values that, you know, they're busy all year round, but suddenly they're out putting it out, and they just march one by one, and it's just stunning how much creativity there is in this community. I want to thank the folks who came to speak with us about the Secure Communities, or the so-called Secure Communities program. I do hope that this... comes back for reconsideration. I am very, very concerned about this, and I hope we have another opportunity. Thank you. And finally, I just wanted to congratulate both Carol and Martha for their work. Carol, for all the work you've been doing on the assessment and getting on statewide radio, and a very, very good interview with Susan Arbetter. If you missed it, the podcast is there. And then right after that, we heard Martha, who I assume you'll be talking about this in your report, but both of you guys did a great job. Thank you.
Thank you, Will. Nathan.
I was in Washington again this past weekend and met with some officials from the White House Office of Public Engagement. And they had a few programs that they're going to have coming out over the next few months. One is going to be an opportunity for us to nominate community leaders, non-elected officials that have contributed to their communities, and the White House is going to spotlight one individual a week, and they have very few names on that list right now. And so, because they're relying on nominations from people. And so I'm going to send out that nomination form as soon as I get it from them. So hopefully we can get somebody from Tompkins County as soon as possible. And then also I'm going to be reaching out to you individually, legislators, because they're also going to start a program soon where they're going to bring in community leaders, also non-electeds, to the White House on a weekly basis to talk about specific issues. And that's going to come on a first-come, first-served basis, too. So I'll also be reaching out to you on that. And then also we'll have another opportunity for – I'll be able to ask that fracking question that never got asked, because I've been invited back to the White House on June 17th, whatever that Friday is, and also for a similar meeting to the one I went to before. And so that's that.
Right. New BFF, right?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah. It's good times.
Well, that sounds exciting, Nathan. Carol?
Yeah. Talk to me, Nathan, before you go, because or respond, because there's really some matters of concern to national housing policy that we've uncovered.
Actually, yeah, that is one area that they want to talk about.
Okay.
Yes. And energy policy, too. So.
Okay, and just by way of apologizing, I didn't mean to sound quite so formal. I'll give a shout out to my stepdaughter, the doctor, as of 11:30 last night in Texas, after which we went to dinner, and after which I was on a plane shortly after 4 o'clock this morning, and I'm still in the same clothes, so I'm going to try to not ramble, but I didn't mean to sound quite so formal.
Congratulations, Carol. Mike?
Well, I'd be remiss if I didn't join in talking about the activities this coming weekend. And Dryden has Dairy Day coming up.
Oh, yeah.
And I realize it's in conflict with other things, but it's a promotion of our dairy industry. We have a wonderful parade. Please come out if you can. Nice activities in Montgomery Park. And the week after that, we're going to dedicate the Lincoln Center addition to the Southworth Library. Also, I just thought, as an aside, I would mention we've been working on redistricting. I'll report on that later, but I read in the paper that Albany County has already redistricted. It was a legislative process.
Doesn't that surprise me?
Keep it the same.
I'm sure it was efficiently done. So, anyone else? Leslie?
Sorry, I don't mean to prolong this because we have a lot to go on, but Mike mentioned Dairy Days, and I just remember a little story I want to tell you all. I was in New York City for most of the last couple of weeks, and there's a gentleman who related to me. He was coming from New York to do some work in upstate, the upstate area, and he said, close to where you live, somewhere up there. And he was just totally amazed. He got lost to see that up here is where they get their milk, and it was just, he was just totally amazed. He thought, I ran into this farm, and there they were. There were cows, and there was a milking thing and a cheesing thing, and he was just totally amazed. So kudos to our farmers that at least one person now in New York City knows where their milk, cheese, and eggs come from. It was, I mean, he was just blown away, you know, being lost, and he's like, oh my gosh, this was just amazing. So I wanted to share that little story. So thanks to our farmers for continuing to do.
Hope you got to see one of the chocolate cows.
I don't know what he saw, but he was just amazed.
Thank you, Leslie. Anyone else? All right, thanks. For my report, I will follow up on the conversation about Albany. Last Wednesday, I was asked to participate in a press conference about the tax cap and mandate relief and the proposal for circuit breaker. There were a number of assembly people there, assembly members. Barbara Lifton was one of them who was supportive as well. My message really was that when the governor says that politicians are opposing the tax cap because it limits their power, that we don't have the power, he does. I thought it was a good opportunity then to go on from there to schedule a bunch of meetings, which I did. Senator Tom O'Mara was very helpful in getting me in to see Dean Skelos. Managed to have 15 minutes with him and with Tom and with his chief of staff, Pete Ellis. And O'Mara is really understands the problem that we're in, and with unfunded mandates. He used to be in county government, and Tom Santulli, the county exec where he's from, bothers him on a daily basis about this, I understand. So he was very supportive, and basically the proposal I was, sort of the message I was carrying was about that there's no mandate relief, and we aren't this, you know, we're really going to be sort of punished doubly. Residents are going to be punished doubly with this proposal until there's mandate relief. And then carried with that the suggestion for the thresholds, the permanent thresholds that had gone through the budget committee and is on your agenda for tonight as well. And we got, I think we got a good response from Skelos. And, of course, there's a lot of, it's their fault, or it's, you know, you'll have to get them to agree, and she's the one who's in charge. There's a lot of that, but, you know, when he said, well, Skelos pointed out that the Senate, the first proposal for a tax cap came out of the Republican Senate for 4% for schools only. And it was our governor who, as a candidate, sort of doubled down on that and said, well, let's make it 2%, and it's got to apply to everybody who charges property taxes. I said, yeah, I know. We're trying to get to talk to him, too. And my next appointments are in the Speaker's office, which was true. So he said, okay, well, you know, we would support this. We'd be supportive of this alternative. We understand the counties are different because of the mandates that we have to pay for. So then I went into, and Barbara Lifton had helped me get a meeting with the secretary to Speaker Silver, and that's the person who's kind of right next to him, you know, right under him. Luann Saccone, and I also met with Jim Yates, who also a top official. And they were also quite interested in this proposal, the idea being that, you know, maybe in the, sort of the last rush, the sausage making at the end of session, that this might be something that would could rise up to the top as something that would sort of balance the damage they're aware that they're going to do to counties. So, in fact, Jim Yates said, when I, he said, well, the Senate will have to agree to it. I said, well, I just spoke to Dean Skelos, and he thinks it's a good idea. So at that point, he said, okay, well, I'll sniff around about it. So we'll see. You know, I ended up meeting with a number of other senators and some other staff. We did get a message from NYSAC that there's been some movement on there's an assembly bill for a permanent 4% sales tax, so there's been some movement on that. And there's also been movement on out of the Senate on permanent authorization for a 30-cent cell phone surcharge. So those are two of the five measures that were on our list. And the NYSAC board meets Thursday, and this proposal is in their board presentation. So that means that is up for board consideration by NYSAC. We were told by kind of everybody that we talked to that if NYSAC doesn't support this, it doesn't go anywhere. So it's very important. We've been, Joe and I have been in touch with the folks there, and I'm hoping that they'll approve this idea as one option for counties. So so that was my last Wednesday. We've been following up since then. One of the other things that happened last week was Joe and I had the opportunity to go up in a Cessna plane with Vince Monticello from Ithaca Police Department, who's also a pilot. And he took us down to Susquehanna County, Pennsylvania, for an overflight to see what the beginning of drilling looks like, gas drilling looks like there. We saw quite a number of pads, mostly just sort of land scraped off in big 5 to 10 acre rectangles. A few places where it seemed that where the equipment was assembled and the drilling might have actually started. A lot of gravel pits. So kind of for every drilling pad, every two drilling pads, there's a gravel pit. And this is clearly just beginning in Susquehanna County. So we took a lot of pictures, and we'll put those together at some point and share them with you. Earlier at planning committee meeting that came up, planning committee meeting this afternoon, it came up the question of when are we going to prioritize our budget discussion, or, you know, budget priorities. I would like to send out a message, sort of meeting wizard, to look for a time when we can get together in July to do that. So look for that time, and I know summertime is even harder than usual to find all of us in one place, but we'd like to schedule a block of time when we can really try to grapple with this. How are we going to make the kind of decisions that we're going to be faced with in the fall? As far as another piece of business that we have to deal with, most of us were part of the compliance training for I call it corporate compliance. Joe, what are we calling it?
So you call it corporate compliance.
There is a deadline. All of us need to be trained. It's about a 30-minute training. There are two folks in this room, and you know who you are. Call Paula to schedule a time, and she'll find a time, you know, that just suits your schedule, we'll get that finished up. And finally, on Friday, I was invited to a press conference to unveil this. Have you seen this yet, Nathan?
Yes, I have.
Okay. This is Restaurant Owner's Manual, an introduction to Hospitality Industry Labor Laws. And the folks in the health department back there know what this is about. The Tompkins County Worker Center worked with our health department, and Nathan was involved, came to the Health and Human Services Committee a year or two ago. And so Nathan took it on. This was an idea that the Worker Center brought to us. And Nathan contacted the Chamber of Commerce, and Audrey Edelman support through the Chamber supported the printing of these. This is a very clear and you know, common sense approach to all sorts of issues that any restaurant owner really needs to know in order to comply with New York State law. It pulls together a ton of information in one place. Our health department is going to be distributing these to restaurant owners when they make their annual inspections. And I just wanted to let you know that this was out there, and thanks to Nathan for working on that, and thanks to the health department for collaborating with the Worker Center to make that happen. And finally,
can I just ask that we get copies of those, if possible?
You know, I'm not sure how many there are. Sigrid, do you know?
I don't know.
Okay. I mean, I know that there are. There was not a pile. I would have brought a pile back if.
I can ask Pete to get us an electronic version. All right.
Yeah. Okay, that'd be great. I'll do that. Okay, and I can certainly leave this on the mailbox over there. And finally, to the Web Workforce Investment Board, I want to appoint Timothy Grippen, Amy Hendricks, and Robert Bantle as new members to that board. So that's my report. Any questions at all? All right, thank you. County Administrator, Joe Mariano.
Thanks, Martha. I have a couple of items on my agenda tonight, including at the end of my report, I will be asking for you to confirm a reappointment. Before I do that, I'll give a little bit of a preamble. I'll ask you if, for any reason, you'd like to go into executive session to talk about it, and then we'll follow your lead on that. And again, that'll be at the end of my report. Just to keep you informed, I think you know there is no tax cap yet. It's in the news every day. There seems to be movement in the direction of a cap, but as we speak, at least as of this moment, there is no cap at this time. We've said a lot of negative things about the state over the last, probably 30 years, but especially over the last several months. There is one bit of good news about the state. They did provide enough funding to this county for this year to allow us to create 117 summer jobs. And I did bring flyers with me that I'll hand out at the end of my report, so you have contact numbers. Julia Maddock tells me the slots are filling up relatively quickly. So if you know folks who need work, I will be distributing these flyers, and again, you'll have the contact numbers for people to call for those jobs. A week from today, a fellow named Bill Leahy will be in town. Some of you may recall that I'm on the board of the new Office of Indigent Legal Defense. In fact, I was supposed to be there today, but there were important things on your agenda, so I couldn't. But as a part of being on that board, I've volunteered to host a regional event here where Bill Leahy, who's the newly appointed director of this newly created state office, will be able to meet and greet public defenders and assigned counsel directors from throughout this region. So he'll be here a week from today in the morning to talk to those folks. But I'm also going to keep him back for another hour or so. So at noon, if any of you would like to meet Bill Leahy, and I've invited a number of judges and criminal justice people, if you'd like to meet him, he'll be in the Hayman Conference Room at noon. So it's an opportunity to say hello. I think a very impressive fellow who I think is going to do a very good job and a very difficult assignment. I did want to speak briefly about corporate compliance, very briefly. Martha talked about some training needs. I will tell you that GO will be seeing some policies that relate to corporate compliance very shortly, one that relates to exclusion screening, one that relates to a whistleblower policy. And we are beginning to button up this process of developing a corporate compliance plan, which is great. Paula has done a wonderful job. I think, Will, you went through it with mental health a year or two ago, and you know how long and complex this is. We're nearing the finish line, and I think when we're done, we will have a good plan and one that will satisfy the state Medicaid Inspector General. So with that, that's really the updates in my reports. I do want to bring to you tonight a request for confirmation of a reappointment of our personnel commissioner. I want to give you just a quick preamble, and again, I'll ask if you want to go into executive session to talk about it. This is kind of an odd thing where we have three titles within the county, and most counties do. They actually have terms of office that are set by the state because of unique relationships that these titles have with the state. Patricia Carey, for example, DSS commissioner, has a state-mandated, state-determined term of office, and she's been appointed, I think, once. Frank Krupa, who is in the back of the room, has a term of office established by the state, as does our personnel commissioner, because the personnel commissioner for the county is also the state's delegate to manage its civil service program. And when you have that direct relationship with the state provides terms of offices to essentially buffer that individual from the ups and downs of local, basically, election cycles. So from time to time, we need to look at these positions and decide whether to reappoint. Normally, this is a very routine process. It's happened kind of by rote in the past. I think all of you have seen through your emails that we put some rigor into the process this year. I don't know if all of you have had a chance to look through the report. Hopefully it made it through the email that talks about the process that was followed in terms of looking at this reappointment. I think you'll find that it was a very rigorous process that was included a 360, my own internal evaluation, a review of initiatives that have been carried out or are underway with the department, a plan for the next couple of years. So I think we've really approached this with vigor and rigor that we haven't done before. And I thought that was important to give you more than just my personal feelings and stories well told as you considered this reappointment. Again, before I would go into any details, if anybody would like to go into executive session to talk about this, I would certainly yield to that. And after that, go in a little bit more detail on the process that we followed.
So this is the report that we were all emailed about a week ago.
Right.
It went through the budget committee as well.
Yeah, we went through it in some detail in budget committee in the latter part of May. I think it was fully vetted there and was sent to each of you a week or so ago for you to take a look at prior to tonight.
And as far as the process, you said to me in a conversation a while ago that this was a process you thought would be applicable, you know, going forward. You thought this was worth doing for other positions.
I do. I think it is. I think, again, I'm trying, I think, to set a precedent that we can follow as these other terms of offices expire and we consider reappointment. I do think it's right to apply this kind of a process to do that so we can bring an informed recommendation to the legislature. Again, we did a very comprehensive survey that looked at a number of performance factors for the commissioner. You've seen it. Strengths and weaknesses and those kinds of things were all captured here as a part of the review.
Okay. Go ahead. I think you were going to go into more detail in the report.
I can, yes. So very quickly going through here, kind of the cornerstone of the review was a 360 review. It was unlike the direct reports that you're involved with right now, where each of us could select the people that we had conduct our 360 or participate in the 360. Every department head was given a survey and an opportunity to provide comments and insights into the performance of the commissioner. So again, that went out to all department heads, looking at leadership factors and job knowledge factors, asking for strengths and weaknesses to be articulated, and asking the department heads, if they had a say, would they recommend reappointing the commissioner or not? I think you've seen in this report that the results of this survey were quite positive on almost every front. The ratings were very high. And in terms of the recommendations of department heads, in terms of what they would do, the recommendation was very strong that they would recommend that Commissioner Fitzpatrick be reappointed. I think of the 19 department heads that participated in the survey, only one suggested any opposition. The rest were supportive, and in fact, 13 were strongly supportive of reappointment. We went beyond department heads. We asked the personnel staff to also participate in the 360, and you've seen in the report, received very strong responses from them, too, that were very consistent with what we found through the department head survey. We asked union leaders to participate in the 360. We only got two of the four back. I think both were kind of in the middle of the rating scale. Neither were overwhelmingly enthusiastic. None were overwhelmingly negative. They've basically indicated a good performance by the commissioner. In terms of my own review, I conduct an annual review, and including this year with the commissioner, my performance review of the commissioner was very strong. We talked about goals, we talked about accomplishments, and again, my rating of the commissioner, based on my 2.5 years of experience, was very good, and I've seen firsthand what Anita Fitzpatrick has done in a variety of areas in this county to contribute to our goals. We did look at the 360. There were some areas where some people suggested there might be some areas where there can be improvement, and we've approached that constructively to develop a 2-year plan to address those areas where we probably want to devote a little more attention. Things that I know you have talked about, annual performance reviews for all employees, working with the WDIC to create a diversity and inclusion award, and a number of other things. So again, I feel very confident here, as opposed to coming to you with my feelings about reappointment. I'm hoping to come to you with what I think is fact and strong support from the organization, strong input from the organization that argues for the reappointment of Commissioner Fitzpatrick to a 6-year term. I'm asking for your confirmation of that. If you have any questions, I'm happy to answer them.
Julie.
Joe, I had asked you to make sure that we all were reminded of the budgetary implications of this appointment, and I
should have mentioned that. In your paper on your desks is a memo from me to Dooley dated today that speaks to that issue. You may recall that a couple of years ago, Commissioner Fitzpatrick basically took her pension. And at that time, there was an adjustment of salary to balance pension and salary. So at current, she is basically being paid a partial salary, but working full time. Dooley's point was, if the situation in personnel ever changed, where if the commissioner were to say to the state comptroller, I don't want to take my pension, which would then allow her income to rise, or if she chose to vacate the position and somebody else were to come in, we would have to adjust our budget to make sure that we had enough money to pay the full salary of the position, which, as shown in your memo, is a little bit less than $95,000.
So it would be in addition to the budget of 30-something?
Yes.
Right. Thank you.
Leslie?
So, Joe, I did not get the benefit of seeing the thing that went out last week. I'm still trying to play catch-up and 9,463 emails. But one of the things that I do recall, and I remember asking you this, and I actually appreciate hearing about the process that you engaged in, is our discussion of the legislature 2 years ago? Was it 2 years ago?
It was 2 years
when
ago.
We made the appointment. It was a little different to understand because of the retirement piece of it. And I was of the impression that I left here that we were going to engage in some kind of discussion, decision, maybe it happened at committee level, about how we were going to go about making a decision about what we were going to do with the position. So whether it was a new hire, reappointment, et cetera, et cetera. So maybe that happened at the committee level and I wasn't aware or a part of that. So I feel kind of left out, not understanding or knowing if there was a role for us in that decision on what to do with the position. So yeah. Was it something that the committee, that happened at committee and a decision got made to not explore other options but just a reappointment?
Well, the committee certainly looked at the full report that I presented last time, and I think I tested their patience in going through that.
Okay.
And we've talked about this process. I did pull out, and I included in the report, my notes that I believe were handed out when this came up back in October of 2009. The question was, at that time, what happens at the end of the term?
Right.
And in my notes from that time, and again, it's in the report, it says the same that would have happened if the retirement hadn't existed. This is when we're looking at the retirement option and coming back on the payroll. The incumbent will indicate whether she has an interest in being reappointed. The county administrator may recommend reappointment or recommend a different candidate to the legislature. So those were my notes and my explanatory notes to the legislature in terms of what I had expected at the end of the process. I'm coming to you tonight and came to committee earlier with a recommendation to appoint. So as opposed to following that other path of recommending a different candidate, right. I'm here with a recommendation to appoint.
Right. I have a quick follow-up. Interesting enough, Joe, my notes have something a little different. But so the evaluation process that you engaged in, you said it wasn't the one we have now that's being used for the direct reports. Where did it come from?
I developed the 360. Leslie, you'll find that there are a number of areas of overlap between the two things. I drew from that and other 360s. I think when you look at each of those questions, you're going to find that the same areas that are being touched on in ours are in this also. In fact, I think it may even go beyond that, the questions that are on our evaluations.
Thank you.
Do we have a motion? Jim?
I would like to make one more comment.
Jim?
I would move to affirm the county administrator's appointment of the personnel commissioner.
Second by Frank. Dooley?
Yeah. Leslie reminded me. I had kind of forgotten what we had been talking about a couple of years ago. And I guess I had been left with an impression that legislators would be more involved at this evaluation time than, as it turned out, we were. And, I mean, it's your appointment, so your evaluation is really all that has to happen. But Leslie reminded me that I had forgotten about that piece. And I understood. I just wanted to second Leslie's memory in this instance.
Well, I think there's been involvement by the committee. We've got this voluminous report that we all received, and anybody certainly could have called Joe with questions or asked the staff for a hard copy, which I did. So,
well, that's assuming that people were able to get that in time and read it before this meeting. I didn't.
We understand everybody is busy, but Joe has to, you know, go through a process, and he did involve the Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee in depth. Let me just clarify for anybody who's listening. This may seem like we're talking about personnel issues. I've been carefully prepared to stop the conversation if this went over into something about performance or about the individual. This has all been about process and you know, what's the issue about the term of her appointment. So if there's anything else, then that's the point at which we would go into executive session. But I think so far it's been all open session material. I think that's fine. Nathan, did I see your hand?
Oh, yeah. I just wanted to say that we did go over this in committee, in Budget and Capital Committee. But also the process that Joe followed really solicits information and feedback from the users of the personnel department the most, which are the department heads. And that feedback was, you know, I guess I can't get down into the performance discussion, but it showed that, you know, that there was a lot of confidence in this reappointment. And that 360 feedback wasn't from a select group of people, but from a broad group of from all the department heads that chose to respond, plus union representation as well. So I think that there was a very good feedback structure, and that I think a good process was followed. I mean, and of course, granted, there's always ways in which we could have expanded that, and I appreciate that. But in terms of outreach to those who use the personnel department the most, I think that happened above and beyond.
Anything else? All right. We have a motion and a second. Are we ready to vote? All in favor of affirming the appointment of Anita Fitzpatrick for the term of commissioner, next term. Please raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 13. Any opposed? Listen, I thought your hand was...
No.
Okay. The 12 to 1, then. I'm sorry. I thought I saw your hand up. 12 to 1, that passes. Thank you very much, Joe.
May I just please say that my no vote is not a reflection at all on the work that our personnel commissioner has been doing. I think she's been doing a stellar job. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Anything else, Joe?
That's all. Thank you.
Thank you very much. County Attorney Jonathan Wood.
Two quick points. One, going back to this process, as a department head, and I know other department heads, we're really pleased to have an opportunity to participate in the process and to comment, which we haven't done previous reappointments or any. So I think from the department head point of view, that was a real benefit and a hope that will continue in future appointments. The one other thing, the chair of the Ethics Advisory Committee has asked me to disclose, as she does every year, to report on the financial disclosure forms. And every year I stall until they're all in, so I don't have to report that they're not all in. And fortunately, this year I do not have to stall because they all came in pretty much on time.
Yes. And for the Thank first you, time John. In my life, I actually had assets, which was awesome. I was like, yes! It was cool.
We're pleased for you, Nathan.
Thank you. Usually it's a very depressing thing.
I know the feeling. Thank you very much, Jonathan. Sure. Any questions? Jim?
Yes, I have a question for Jonathan, and I mentioned it prior to the meeting. I came to my mailbox today, and I was served with a summons by the United States District Court, Northern District of New York. I'm the liaison member on the Human Service Coalition, and an employee of the Human Service Coalition is suing the Human Service Coalition. Everybody and their close relatives is named in the lawsuit. I'm a voting member of the board, and I don't believe I'm an official member of the board, but I will be talking to the county attorney about this because there are other county employees who were named in it, and it's a rather disturbing thing to find this in your mailbox. Although I would love to join a witness protection program if I had to. But. Anyway.
Okay. Yeah, no, please pass that on to me, and I got the same message from Patricia Carey.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Jonathan. Finance Director David Squires.
Just before the meeting, I laid on your desk the current status of the properties exposed to foreclosure. We do have an auction scheduled for June 23rd. I'm happy to report that it's continuing to dwindle, this list. I'm only aware of one owner-occupied property right now. And there was a property in the town of Ulysses that generated a lot of interest because of its location, and that property was redeemed by the owner. So it's going to be an uneventful auction, I believe. And the other thing I wanted to, the formal presentation of this document, this is the county's annual financial report. It's the report that we submit to New York State, and it's the basis. This report is what is audited by auditors. So this is an unaudited report, but I'm presenting it to the clerk. It does illustrate the county has continued to reflect the stable financial situation, which we've shown for the last 5 or 6 years. All the funds, it's a fund-based report, and all the funds are pretty much stable from year to year. No big headlines. The major story of this year's finances is going to be continuing liquidity decline. While our assets went up, our liquidity basically went down as a percentage of assets, which is of some concern. But I will be giving a complete analysis of the report on next Monday's Budget Committee meeting.
Thank you, Dave. Any questions?
Leslie? David, it's just a quick question on the foreclosure form. I used to know what the numbers mean. There's a dollar amount. The columns aren't, the headings aren't there anymore. And then, like, the first ones is a 1,000 something, and then 50,000. What's that? Which is which?
The
dollar amounts is what?
The dollar amounts represent the tax liens
that
the tax liens that the enforcement's based upon. like it's generally 1 or 2 years or 3 years of taxes.
Okay.
And the amounts aren't really, at this point, they're no longer relevant because they are generally higher. The amount has to be paid off because of the stage we're in. But that's what the original amounts were when they went to the original petition for foreclosure.
What represents the original amount?
In October. Those the dollar amounts.
Those dollar
amounts.
Amounts,
yeah.
So the second to last column that has...
The second to last column numbers. With the dollar... That's the assessed value.
Thank you.
Yeah. So it's not a lot of value in terms of... historically, if you look at our auctions, we generate about... The proceeds represent about 50% of the assessed value of the properties. Some go for more, some go less, but that's what you'd expect out of a typical tax foreclosure auction.
Okay. Thanks. Mike and then Will.
I just wanted to say I think it's important that we recognize what a great job our finance department does with this foreclosure list. Every year, they stand on their head to protect the property owners, to try to work out with those that are having financial difficulty methods of pain beyond just taking away property. We don't like to take away property. I know Dave does a lot of this work himself. He gets out there and views properties. This doesn't happen in all counties. We have a very small number because it's due to Dave and his staff working at this and the planning department that helps us. It's an important thing, and I think it's something we ought to be pretty proud of in Tompkins County. Thank you, David.
Will.
And that actually may speak to the explaining the final column, which I think I understand that, Dave, but a possible redemption means what?
There's a likelihood that somebody could come in. It's expected. I think that possible redemptions will come in and pay by Friday.
Okay.
Because they said they would. And it just doesn't seem logical that.
So they would not.
They would.
And that's because you've taken the effort to make the contact. Yeah. Thank you.
David, could I have the copy? Thank you. Jim.
David. I just asked Mike, how many parcels are there in the county?
There's about 33,000 parcels.
Okay.
And it starts off at any one time, there's about 3,000 separate, at any time, 3,000 parcels delinquent at some stage. They didn't pay the current year taxes or they won, And when you go into the foreclosure, it's remarkably, it averages about 300 properties are exposed to foreclosure starting in October in the year in which we do the enforcement. And by the end of the process, it's down to 20, 25. And in terms of the way you measure tax collection, we measure it. We collect 98.5% of the taxes that are turned over to us annually. So it doesn't produce a large burden on the operations of the county. Some counties have to borrow every year as a result of people not paying their taxes.
Thank you.
Anyone else? Carol?
Yeah, I was just going to ask, I was going to say this just looks like it's astoundingly low in terms of the amount of money going to foreclosure auction compared to the value of property in Tompkins County. I was wondering if there's any way that this gets benchmarked against other counties, ratios, and whether we actually stand as high as it must look from these numbers.
Every county is different, and the enforcement process is different. The one thing we look at, the universal measure is, what is the value of those taxes that are non-current? And ours have actually declined in 2010 at the end of the year, largely a result of a big collection because we had a significant amount of taxes attributable to a nursing home on our books that we settled out in 2010, And then when we removed that, we collected that, that reduced our value down to where we actually had a one-time gain in revenue for 2010. Generally, it goes the other way. Your tax receivables increase, and therefore you have to take a hit because the way you recognize revenues from taxes.
Is there any way to benchmark it looks to me as though we do an incredible job. Yeah. These are tough times for people, and the fact that we have so few who've gone to the point of foreclosure must say something about us, the level of support that we give to people to not get into that situation in the first place. I mean, I assume it's not that we're just so hard-nosed we've already foreclosed on them and we haven't given them a chance.
My colleagues, I can tell you that if you go to Chemung County, they have an auction brochure with over 100 parcels sold every year. So it depends on the economic situations in the particular counties. I think we are lower than most. I mean, the amount that we get to this point, but it's not unusual because all the counties don't want to remove people from their homes.
Thank you very much, David. Appreciate it. Thanks. We have a special opportunity to hear from Paula about something that is on your desk and is going to help us with the direct report evaluations that we are going to be starting tonight in the executive session. So, Paula, Deputy County Administrator.
Thanks. This will only take a few minutes. Just wanted to bring your attention to an item that I put on your desk just before the meeting started. At the very top, the title is Designing Employee Performance Goals as a Tool for Defining Organizational Priorities. And I was asked to put this handout together to just help facilitate the conversation you're going to have later on this evening in executive session with regard to performance goals for direct reports. And what I've tried to do is just tease out some basic guidelines for how you go about formulating your goals. I know you've already been working hard to do that. So this is just a sort of a checklist against how you've already formulated some of those statements and how you might want to refine them. And then what I've also done is given you just a global example using our diversity initiative, because I know sometimes somebody can give you a formula, but it's really good to have a real-life example. So when you look on the back of this page, that's what I've done there at the top. And then, of course, as you begin to put your goals together, there's how do you lay out how performance is going to be measured. And so at the very bottom of that second page, that gives you some of the key factors that come into play when you start to really design measurements for whatever goal you're going to lay out. If you have any questions, I can certainly answer them. I don't know how long you'd like me to stay around, Martha, but
I'd love you to stay for the whole meeting. That was indeed very brief, perhaps a little too brief, but are there any questions? We'll start with that. Any questions for Paula?
I don't have a question, but can I make a comment?
Of course.
Thank you. My comment is, I think it was probably about 5 or 6 years ago, if not 5 years ago, that our Deputy County Administrator, Paula, came on board. And I remember performance measures being one of the very first things that you were talking about. And here you are 5 years later giving us a snapshot. So thank you, and thanks for your work for the last, is it 5 years or 6 years?
Thank you. Yes, 5 years. This past Sunday, June 5th, I survived five. Thank you. 5 years.
Who's counting?
Oh, thank you.
Are there any other questions about the handout or the formula that's been given here? And by the way, some of you might recall a couple of years ago, and I know it's been about 2 years, but when we had the orientation session for the performance review process, I actually provided you with a document on putting together an overarching performance goal statement. That same formula is offered on the back page here as well. So some of you might recognize some of that information from a couple of years ago. Pam.
Yeah, this is all in anticipation of what we're going to do at the end of the meetings with our direct reports. And so what you are giving us here is something that we can look to as we go through this discussion. I mean, it seems like for some of the people here, some of this is going to be you know, they don't have any context within which to put this. So, but I mean, I think this will be very helpful to us when we're sitting together at the end, because by then our brains will all be a little bit softer, and we will be exhausted. And so having this will be a tremendous help to keep us focused. So.
Well, I know that some of the items that have been presented in the past that were labeled as goals looked more like a to-do list or maybe a general comment, and really didn't give enough guidance to the direct report or actually to yourselves on how you were actually going to monitor and measure what it was you were asking them to achieve within X period of time. And so we thought that a handout like this just might be helpful, in particular the SMART guide about being specific and measurable and attainable and realistic and time-bound, those things you might want to take into heart when you look at some of the comments that you've written down that you think might be goals, but you might want to refine them a little bit using this information so it provides a little more direction and guidance.
Okay. Anything else? Thank you very much, Paul.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
And certainly appreciate your important work getting our whole process established for evaluating the direct reports. Thank you. Are there any resolutions to be added to or withdrawn from the agenda? Jim, then Pam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would like to add to the agenda resolution number JID 2694. Authorization for a public hearing, Tompkins-Cortland Community College Operating Budget 2011-2012. The public hearing would be June 21st, 2011.
Okay. Brian seconds that. All in favor of adding this? It should be in your packet. All in favor of adding this to the agenda? Please raise your hand. Any opposed? That's unanimous.
Thanks,
Jim. Pam?
Yes, I'd like to move off Resolution K. It should be in your red folders. Authorization to allocate 2011 beautification funds, and I so move.
And Carol seconds. All in favor of adding that, please raise your hand. Any opposed? Nathan?
Yeah, no.
Favor? Okay. Opposed? So it passes 10 to 2.
Could I just ask a question?
Yes. I'm sorry, 11 to 2.
11 to 2. Will we consider this when I do my PDAC, or will it be at the end?
I think we can do it under PDAC, right? Yeah, that can be under PDAC.
Okay.
And Jim's under budget.
Okay.
Leslie?
I'd like to withdraw Resolution F. From the agenda, it needs to go through the Public Safety Committee, which we will try to have meet before the next legislature meeting, and this resolution will be coming back then with some change language.
Okay, great. Thank you, Leslie.
And that's the Secure Communities resolution for those who are here on it. It will be coming back on the 21st, whenever our next meeting is.
Okay. Thank you, Leslie. Nathan.
I'd like to move to add resolution. Oh, how do I say this?
Move to reconsider.
Requesting introduction, the resolution, I don't know what number, I guess 2011-80, requesting introduction of home rule legislation amending section 603 of the Retirement and Social Security Law in relation to service retirement benefits and disability benefits for certain detective investigators with 20-year service without regard to age.
Is there a second for that? Will seconds that. This needs...
Do we have a copy of that?
Yeah, that should be on your folder. It's what we looked at last meeting. Is the top says defeated.
Thank you.
So this requires 8 votes to be allowed to be reconsidered because it has been on an agenda before. It's not one of those new ones where we require 10 votes. So, and Nathan is... standing to ask for this reconsideration because he wasn't at the meeting when it was discussed and voted on last time. Okay, are we ready to vote? So all in favor of reconsidering this. This is not voting on the motion itself, but just allowing us to reconsider it at the appropriate part of the meeting. All those in favor of reconsidering, please raise your hand. 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Opposed? 1, 2, 3, 4. That is then on the table. Passes 9 to 4. Thank you, Nathan. Anything else? folks. Okay, I'll go through the consent agenda. And then I would like to ask Leslyn McBean-Claiborne to take the Public Safety Committee, and we'll go to the Public Safety Report with the reconsideration motion, so because Gwen is in the back. And maybe we can work on get the tourism, what?
No, I got it now. I was wondering why you were calling me for public safety. Now I remember.
As vice chair of the committee. And
yes,
then maybe,
ma'am.
And then let's go to planning for Gene McFeeder's sake in the back. All right. Okay. I'm sorry. And Arel is, I'm sure, here for a bunch of things, right? Capital. All right. We'll work it out, Arel. All right. So let me go to consent agenda first. Please ask if you want anything to be withdrawn for discussion. Resolution A, this is the revised version, authorizing a license to enter Cornell University chemical disposal and radiation burial sites, continued remediation, monitoring, and maintenance work at Ithaca Tompkins Regional Airport. And Resolution B, authorizing changes in fee structure, Tompkins County Mental Health Clinic. I have a motion. Leslie moves that. Is there a second for the consent? Frank seconds. All in favor of the consent agenda, please raise your hand. Any opposed? That is unanimous. Thank you very much. So, Madam Vice Chair of Public Safety.
So, the Public Safety Committee will meet on the 21st, just before this legislature meeting, at around 5 in the afternoon, and then again on the 30th. Of June? I don't remember.
You look at me?
I'm looking at Michelle.
I can't remember.
Oh, okay. Well, stay tuned. There'll be another Public Safety Committee meeting. On the 21st, we will be considering two resolutions at that time, the Secure Communities Resolution, as well as a grant resolution from the Sheriff's Department for child safety seats, I believe. So those two will be considered at that time. If you have any comments regarding secure communities, I invite you to please give me a call before the meeting. I'd love to hear if you have any concerns or comments about it. With that, I will Nathan's resolution.
Hold on, Nathan. Dooley?
Oh, sorry.
Leslyn, I just wanted to mention that quite a few years ago, by which I might mean 8 or 10, I don't know, there had been something very similar that happened when there was an attempt to have INS things enforced by local police departments. And at that time, my memory serves me correctly, our legislature took a stand against that. And so maybe before you have your meeting to consider this resolution that you withdrew, a little staff research could find that and it could get added to the resolution.
So I did ask for research and we got discussion. There was information and discussions that we have, but no stance.
Hmm.
So I got the minutes and so on, but no stance.
That surprises me.
Yeah. I know we did have a resolution around immigration issues, but it wasn't the same thing. I do want to add one other thing, Martha. I'm sure people are aware in the news, and it's just, expressing our condolences to the sheriff's deputy in Oneida County who was shot and killed in the line of duty. It's always a reminder when we hear these things of how dangerous the work is that our law enforcement and emergency services personnel engage in every day. One just never know. They take their lives in their hands, and we really do appreciate how much they do and how brave they are. And certainly our condolences to the family of the deputy and to the department and the community that is mourning that loss. So I wanted to make sure that that is mentioned as well. And to remind all our officers to keep doing what they're doing and trying to protect this community, but also keeping themselves safe.
Thank you very much, Leslyn. So I'll go to Nathan for the motion that was added.
Yes.
Do I have to say it again?
Yeah.
Okay.
So I'm getting over a cold, so I have like shortness of breath, so this is actually kind of hard. Resolution 2011-80. I'd like to move this requesting introduction of home rule legislation amending Section 603 of the Retirement and Social Security Law in relation to service retirement benefits and disability benefits for certain detective investigators with 20 years service without regard to age, and I so move.
Is there a second? And Jim seconds that. All right. Did you want to speak to this or discussion?
I like to speak to it in so far as just saying that I support this resolution and that it is important for us to have this legislation in order to make sure that our detective investigator in the DA's office is given the for recruitment in the future and for now and into the future. I think that this is important for us to do because this is an investigator level position and it should have the same types of retirement benefits as other law enforcement, I think. So I think it's a matter of fairness.
Jim and then Carol.
Thank you, Martha. I've supported this last time around and I will support it again. I think the history and the DA is here and she may speak to this also, but the history in the department has been since the current district attorney has taken over as during budget time. She has been, let me say it this way, a good soldier when it comes to her budget and what has gone on with the expenses in the district attorney's budget. I think in this particular issue, it widens the scope of people that you can hire for the job. Without a 20-year retirement, it basically eliminates any law enforcement people who are currently law enforcement people. They're not going to come and work for the county or any county without that hard-earned thing that they've negotiated for many, many years. My sense is also that any county in New York State near the size of ours or close to our size has a detective working for the district attorney. It only makes sense. If one looks at the crime rate in Tompkins County alone over the last 5 years, a district attorney with a private investigator will have used that person numerous times in some of the kinds of events that we've had. So I would urge people to give the DA the opportunity to hire who she can hire for this job, and it certainly widens the scope with this item involved.
Okay, I'll get Carol, Leslin, then Frank.
Yeah, I was one of the people who didn't support this last time, and the reason I still have some concerns, but I'm also willing to consider that I maybe misunderstood. My concern was that Tompkins County not participate in what I think gives the notion of pensions and government employees a bad name in some states by giving people the opportunity to participate in retirement while working. And somehow, whether we're doing that or not, I wanted something in here, or I feel more comfortable if somebody could either point to where in here it makes clear that we're not being asked to participate in that, or add some wording to it that makes clear if it isn't already in here.
Gwen, do you want to address that?
Yes, thank you very much. Good evening, everybody. It became clear in preparing for this meeting tonight that although we are focused on the retirement package for this position, some of the concerns of the legislators with whom I've spoken and corresponded over the last week or so really goes to the question of the position. There are questions about unfairness to new hires. There are questions about not putting the position through the budget cycle, but rather trying to get it in
outside of the budget cycle. I think there were a couple of legislatures that spoke to that. There was a legislator that thought that we should hire multiple part-timers, and one legislator who thought we should contract with a firm. In terms of the retirement, Carol has just voiced a concern that someone work a job while collecting retirement. And Jim has remarked that the retirement for a job is what the retirement is. Let me start by addressing Carol's concern. Under the scenario that I have proposed, there would be no double dipping. There would be nobody working while collecting retirement, because potentially the successful candidate could be a person not currently collecting retirement and therefore not coming to work for me while collecting retirement. Now, the flip side of that is something that was raised previously, was what happens if you hire a part-timer? Well, if I hire a part-timer, if I hire a retired police officer, when they hit gross earnings of $30,000, their retirement freezes, right? They can't earn that next dollar after $30,000 of gross earnings while they're collecting their law enforcement retirement, unless they get a waiver, what's called a 211 waiver, which currently I'm advised by county administration are not being handed out. So to take, Carol, your concern first, under the scenario that I'm proposing, the candidate pool, if we had a regular DA investigator retirement package, the candidate pool would include people who aren't currently collecting retirement. So they'd be working, just like I'm working, and paying into a retirement system. And for those of you in the room who should be, really every one of you, myself included, for whom money's a concern, it isn't going to be any cheaper to hire a retired person than to hire a not retired person, because this county aggregates its fringe. Fringes will be charged at the fringe rate, 56.1%, Joe, am I close? That fringe rate is the fringe rate. Now, I have actually got an idea. I know. Unique, but I do. I had hoped to fill this position in March and have it hired in April. I needed the position then, as I made abundantly clear. I need the position as I stand here now. But now we're almost halfway through June. And we're in the budget cycle. I know it was a concern of some legislators that this position be able to be considered in the context of that. So I'm saying this. A DA investigator is a discrete job with a discrete retirement package. I don't think that we as a single isolated county should say, well, our DA investigator isn't going to get that retirement. I think it narrows the pool of candidates and creates a scenario where the only person I'll hire will be the person who will be collecting retirement while they're working. However, if we can see our way clear to funding this position with a standard DA investigator retirement package, same as every other county who has a DA investigator package, check Section 603 of the Social Security and Retirement Law. That's what they get. I will not fill it. We apply for home rule and we get approval. I will not fill the position. I'll run it through the budget. Now, what's the upside of that? The upside of that is you can all consider it in the context of everything else you have to consider. I know we're in tough times, and I know there's a crunch, unlike any crunch we've ever faced before. But I don't think anybody in this room is prepared to say right now there will be no new positions created in Tompkins County for the next 2 years. And I don't think anybody in this room would be in a position to say there will be no new hires in Tompkins County. So the difference in the pension, I believe, cousin, you were the one that asked, it was a smart question. What's the difference? It's $5,000. It doesn't kick in till 2013. Now, I've got the money to pay salary and fringe on this position for 12 months if the $2,011 dollars I've got hold. So that's 12 months I could pay for this position. I anticipate this position being a significant revenue generator, particularly in the area of the collection of the stop DWI fines. I hope we could realize in excess of $100,000 of that money just by tasking the investigator with that job. Now, what I'm saying is, now, if you agree, if you approve this, we won't have the new investigator till January 1st. But what will we have? Somebody who knows what their retirement is, so they're not coming into a contingent position that they could that could disappear any quicker than any other job in the county. It will have gone through the budget. I do the interviewing later, after the budget process, when I know what the budget, what my budget looks like. I'm preparing my scenario budgets for you now, reflecting the 11.2% cut and the 7.8% cut. But we don't know how it's going to come out in the end. And some of you have been concerned, I'm going to hire somebody who might be out of work in 10 or 12 months. Well, I think if I put this position through the, after the budget process, I think we minimize that risk. I think we don't cost the county any more dollars by giving the investigator package. It's the same package the sheriff deputies get. It's not going to cost. What the fringe rate is what the fringe rate is, whether or not the person is retired or not. I think that's important for some of you who had specific concerns about that. We've already reviewed the idea of having contract employees. We're going to run afoul and likely run afoul of the IRS regulations if we do that. I think this is a halfway position. It doesn't serve me best, but it will serve. The full retirement package, if you approve asking for home rule tonight, you're not saying you're giving me the position. You're saying we can go to the state for home rule, and then I will put it through the budget process with everything else, and what shakes out at the end is what shakes out at the end. Does anybody, I tried to answer all the questions I knew about. Does anybody have another question for me?
But just to clarify, if we don't do this tonight, the state legislature is supposed to finish its session right. June 20th, maybe the 21st or 22nd.
That's correct.
Even our next legislative meeting is really late. Too late.
I had a conversation with Assemblywoman Lifton last week. She said that if the county passed the resolution to ask for home rule, and if we faxed a copy of the approved resolution to her tomorrow, it's not impossible that we could have home rule approval before they go into summer session. And she said she and O'Mara would do their level best to get it through. She sounded confident. She couldn't promise. Definitely another month won't do it.
Right, and we don't know whether there will be another session between June and next January. So
right.
Okay. All right. I've got Leslyn, Frank, and then Pat.
I didn't have my hand up. I was just going to say, dang, I'm guilty. Whatever you just said, you know. I just felt that way. Never mind.
You said
it's like
guilty?
I'm just supposed to say I'm guilty.
And you wanted the maximum sentence.
Yeah, I did. I just. That's why you're the DA girl. Get it.
Oh, Frank.
Gwen, what you and Jim both mentioned that without this arrangement or this change, it's more difficult to hire anybody. Is it impossible to hire anyone else?
Well, I don't know. I haven't tried. But let me make this analogy. What if the county decided it was going to hire a doctor to be a county doctor, but we weren't, as part of their benefits, going to pay their malpractice insurance? Would that be fair? Probably not. Would it shrink the pool of candidates? Definitely. Would it make it impossible to hire one? Probably not. Probably not. Is it a good idea? I don't think so. You know, the job of an investigator is not something we're creating here today. It's a job that's existed for a long, long time. And the retirement package for every other DA investigator is the same retirement package that I'm standing here asking you for, the same retirement package that the sheriff deputies get. And I'm asking, if I can show that this position can generate the revenue I expect it will, I think you guys will be eager to support it in future. Mm-hmm. But I don't believe that it's fair to the new hire. I don't believe it's fair to
My bottom line is, it's not fair to the people of Tompkins County who elect me to stand up here and advocate for public safety needs. The best candidate is going to be a candidate who's going to have the ability to tap into this retirement. I don't see it costing the county more money in fringes, because the fringe won't be different.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I think you just answered my question, Gwen. Let me just be absolutely clear about this. The one piece of information that I don't recall having before we last voted had to do with how we would be treating this position in relation to similar positions in other parts of New York State. And one of the things that came out of a conversation I had, not with you, but with someone else, was that this is the common practice in New York State to do this, that there are other counties that do this.
Oh, absolutely.
And do it the same way that we're talking. Because my sense the last time that we talked about this, that there was almost a sense that this was a really unique thing, that we were somehow creating a unique way of doing this without us really understanding.
Let me disabuse anyone of that notion. If we don't provide a law enforcement type retirement package for DA investigator, then we are doing something completely new, completely unheard of, completely pretty much off the grid. What I'm proposing, and if you look in the retirement law, paragraph after paragraph, you will see all the counties who went for home rule approval so they could amend their law so their investigators could get the same retirement that they would get if they stayed in the sheriff's office or a PD for their career.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Frank.
Yeah, this question is not for you, Gwen. It's probably for Jim or for Nathan. The track record in Albany right now isn't so great. We've tried to get some amendments made and home rule legislation and whatnot. Even if I realize time is of the essence because things are going to close down here in 2 weeks or close down there in 2 weeks, do you have any sense as to what the probability is that this home rule request is going to pass?
I actually know the answer, Frank.
Oh,
I know the answer to that.
Take a shot.
My name's not Jim.
Let me take a shot. Yeah, but my dad's name was Jim. I had a conversation with Assemblywoman Lifton, and I asked her that very question. She said that the home rule applications that are being rejected are those home rules that relate in some direct way to the tax levy. That she does not see a difficulty with a home rule application to allow us to amend the retirement law. And now I'll yield the floor to the guy whose name is Jim.
Why don't you take a shot, Jim?
No, I was going to say the same thing, and Nathan would say the same thing, and Gwen answered twice. It makes sense that if it's going to get done, you know, it has to get done within the next 7 days or so. And, you know, we can only count on what the legislators say. We'll work on it and we'll try to get it done. I did note today that the 1% sales tax thing made it through for Tompkins County, at least to a certain point.
Yeah, and if I might add, I mean, it's the home rule legislation like this, based when I used to be an aide for Assemblywoman Lifton, and it's what they do at the very end of session. I mean, it will happen at the end of session because that's what they do.
Mike?
Yeah, if it really happens.
I was going to ask Joe, we seem to have a different response about the cost to the county here from last time. My understanding, if we go to 20-year retirement, that's an increase in cost to us because it is a 20-year versus the age 62 and 2 retirement that the rest of the people have. Is that correct?
Yeah, and I just choked on my water, so bear with me for a second. There will be, in 2013, the county's pension bill would be affected by about $5,000 by the difference between the 20-year pension and a regular employee retirement system pension. Difference in rate, I think, is 8 points on salary. So that $5,000 comes to the county as a part of its overall pension bill. We then spread it to every department kind of evenly, so we don't really distinguish between departments like Sheriff that have higher pension rates than departments like mine that don't. We just spread it evenly. So that gets built into the overall fringe rate that everybody pays. So the county itself would see an estimated $5,000 effect in 2013 for this.
Thank you.
Julie?
Yeah, I'm one of those strange people who would be happier not to see this needed in order to fill the position. And I asked Gwen earlier today if she had sought applicants and were they all in need of this kind of package, or were any of them already retired and with the necessary skill set to come to work. I think what Gwen told me was that she had advertised, had had six responses, and they would all expect this kind of package. Did I understand you correctly?
Not quite.
Okay.
I haven't interviewed them yet.
Okay.
I don't know what package they would be looking for. What I said to you that probably I didn't say very clearly was, whether they were hired full-time or half-time, they could access the county health policy, to which you responded you weren't so concerned about that. It was the retirement. But the fringe that the county would pay, my understanding from talking with the Commissioner of Personnel is it wouldn't be affected. Even if we hired somebody who was collecting retirement, we'd still have to pay fringes on that position. So
yes.
I hope that clarifies it, and I'm sorry if I was unclear.
No,
earlier.
It was the idea that you had already advertised for some and gotten some responses. I didn't know you hadn't talked to them. So that's fine.
No, I haven't interviewed them.
Okay.
Because, yeah.
I want to say that I truly believe that this position is important to your department, and I wish you had it already. I do not like your most recent idea to put it off for more months. If you needed it in March and you need it now, then you need it before January. And so I'm troubled by your most recent suggestion in trying to work with us, because we're a hard group to work with. I understand that. I would, since I missed the first vote, as Nathan did, because I went to vote in the school board election too, I probably will come down in favor of this, but not if you're going to put it off until January. So how's that?
Okay, well, I will say that this is just about the retirement package. And it's really late already. We have a lot more business. And this is all that's in front of us right now. I'm sure we can say through the Public Safety Committee, talk about how this is implemented, assuming we get this. So if there's anything new, I'll take a hand, but Brian.
Actually, I'd just like to point out, just with this, you're right. That's all you're authorizing is the waiver of the system. We could still have the same argument later on during budget in terms of whether we need the position or not.
And I'm sure we will.
But even if you get this, you know, at some point you may or may not choose to use it.
Right. This is just to allow this to be a tool that she has.
Yeah, right. We're laying the groundwork. We're setting the foundation for an option. And I'm trying to work with the interests that have been conveyed to me since the process started.
It really is late.
Yeah.
Are we ready to vote?
We are.
Okay. All in favor of Resolution 2011-80, please raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Opposed? 1, 2, 3, 4. That passes 9-4. Is that the right number? That's the right number. Okay. All right. Thank you very much, Gwen.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. Now, if we can juggle a little bit. Thanks for the public safety report, Leslin. Can we juggle to Planning, Development, Environmental Quality Committee, Pam Magasey, Chair?
Yes. I'm actually going to put off my report until our next meeting. But I would like to move Resolution K, authorization to allocate 2011 beautification funding, and I'd like to say something after someone seconds it.
Second by Will. Does everybody find it? Okay. Go ahead, Pam.
Okay, this is a request that was brought to us. The Tourism Board decided to increase the allocations because of the amount of money in the tourism fund. They had put together a very conservative budget, and this things have gotten better, and so they added some money in. This is money, our tourism money, we collect it throughout the county, and we use it throughout the county. There are areas, for example, in the Ambassadors Program, which is centered on the Commons, that is some money that is just used for there. But that is because the Commons is a central spot where tourists come, and so it's important that we have these people there to help the tourists who are coming into our community to find their way and to answer questions. And then there's more, most of the rest of the money is for plant materials and for to help additional summer program assistant, a person to work on the mayor's garden project. So anyway, so that's an explanation. And Gene McPheeters is here if people have further questions.
Go ahead, Jean.
Thank you. This was confused and last minute in some ways, and I apologize for that. It was because of a timing issue, and I further confused it by misstating something at the meeting this held right before this. I have a written statement, so that you can read this and pass this along. Thank you. I was asked if the $2,000 that goes to the Downtown Ithaca Alliance is all that and covers ambassadors, this edition, if all the money that covers the ambassadors comes from the tourism funds. I said yes, and I said it firmly, but I was mistaken. I went back and checked in my office, and in fact, it only covers about 60% of those costs. The other 40% does come from monies from the city and money the DIA raises itself. I was thinking of just the personnel costs and hadn't added in the costs for things like supplies and materials, etc. So I hope that explains it, and I'm not going to say anything else. You have time with us.
Okay. Thank you, Jean. Anyone else? All right. Ready to vote on Resolution K? Please raise your hand if you're in favor of Resolution K. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Opposed? 1, 2, 3. That passes 9-3 with one out of the room. All right. Thank you very much, Jean. Thank you, Pam. And that's the end of your report, Pam?
Yes, I just decided I'd put it off until our next meeting in the interest of time with our heavy schedule tonight.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much. All right, let's go to facilities. So maybe Arell can go on. Facilities and Infrastructure Committee, Carol Chalk, Chair.
Yes. Okay, what are we up to here?
Facilities.
Yes. I have a resolution. We have already passed it, the consent agenda, the Cornell University chemical disposal and radiation burial sites. Is that correct?
Yes.
So I have a resolution G. There, I believe, is a revised version in your packets as adopted by the Facilities and Infrastructure Committee. Authorization to execute an agreement with Holt Architects for architectural and engineering design services, Tompkins County Human Services Annex Building Renovation Project, and I so move.
And Mike seconds that. Okay.
Do you like me to speak?
Any questions?
No.
Now, let's assume if there are questions, people will ask questions. So, all right, ready to vote? All in favor of the revised resolution, please raise your hand. Any opposed? That is unanimous. Okay. Thanks, Ralph. All right. Anything else on your report?
Karen? Just that we had a very successful groundbreaking for the solid waste recycling and reuse center. It was well attended. It was just a very feel-good event in the midst of difficult times, well reported in the paper, and thank you to all who came out to support Barb Ekstrom, the rest of the county, and their team. And then Joe gave us a quick update on the road use preservation process, which they are not quite ready to bring back to us. There are two major concerns they're still working on, which are the threshold items that you know about and the coordination with our towns. Joe's got some good ideas. The highway superintendents are working on it, and that will come back to us in the future.
All right, great. Thank you very much. Any questions for Carol? All right, let's go back to the order. Government Operations Committee, Mike Lane, Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Government Operations Committee has been working overtime the last couple of weeks. We, as I reported last time, received over 30 applications for our redistricting committee, our independent redistricting committee, which this legislature has authorized. We reviewed those at all our meetings. All of our legislators were invited to attend with the committee.
Excuse me, Mike.
Certainly.
We don't have a quorum in the room. Oh, okay. We just have 1, 2, 3, 4.
You gotta count yourself.
Yep. Okay. All right. Nobody can leave until somebody else comes back. All right. I'm sorry, Mike. Go ahead.
All right. Well, I think this is kind of important, so I wish everybody were here, but I'll just go on. We had the 30 applications, which were reviewed. All members of the legislature were invited to all of our sessions and our interviews. We interviewed 16 over 4 different sessions. And I just want to remind the committee is, besides myself, is Julie Kiefer and Dave McKenna, Pat Pryor, and Peter Stein. We held a special meeting on Monday, and we reviewed our notes on the interviews and passed a resolution, which is before you tonight, for a recommendation for 9 people to serve on the committee and a chair. And I would say that those folks are as follows. Heinrich DeLay, Linda Duttweiler, John Gutenberger, Michael Hadry, Margaret Hobby, Dan Calwallo, Eric Lerner, Sarah Reistetter, and Jeffrey True. And we think this is a good committee. We probably had 30 good people. We probably could have pulled 3 committees out of that list that could have done a good job. I'm sure each of us might have wanted different people. But this is what we came up with. Nobody, I think, was totally satisfied with everybody on the list, but it is a diverse group. It's a group that's diverse politically, and I think these are folks that can work with each other, work in a nonpartisan manner, and do the best for our county. So with that, I'd like to move this resolution, if I may.
And Pat seconds that. Excuse me. We usually have a break at 7:30. That would be a time when people can expect to get up and move around. So I hope we can get some attention on this really important initiative. I've been meaning to second the comment that Mike made about how much time has gone into this process. It's been really such a thoughtful process, so careful. The GEO committee has spent so many hours working on this, and it's really the standout in New York State, and I really just congratulate all of you and thank you for the work that you've done.
Thank you. I did want to point out, too, that the resolution also designates Heinrich DeLay as the chair.
Okay. Brian.
Was this already seconded?
Yes.
Okay. Thanks. Then I, too, would I can appreciate, actually I don't appreciate, because I don't know, but how much work's gone into this, but I'm sure a ton. My question Mike or members of the committee, was there any thought to designating any alternates to this, only because we're looking at over a year and things change, people move, people get sick, that sort of stuff?
No, there weren't. We had discussed it and decided not to do that. We felt that if someone had to go off the commission for some reason, the commission could do one of two things. It could either decide to proceed with eight people, for example, or it could come back to the legislature and ask us to find someone to sit. And we could go back to the applications we had.
Okay, that's what I was going to ask. Presumably someone that wasn't picked. Okay.
I was part of a conversation where that came up, and it was felt that if somebody were asked to sit in, say, as an alternate, but not allowed to vote, that mm-hmm. would be pretty tacky. Mm-hmm. You know, and so...
Oh, I'm sure it wouldn't be any fun.
Right, right. So I know time commitment was one of the questions that came up in the interviews, I understand from Mike. So any other questions or comments? Ready to vote. All in favor of Resolution C, please raise your hand. Any opposed? Congratulations. That's unanimous. Terrific.
Nice job.
Thanks for the support for our committee. Thank you.
Mike, would you talk a minute about staffing? I know that's a big issue, too.
Yes. I have met with our county administrator and some other folks, a deputy county administrator. I think he's going to be coming forward with a proposed budget for staffing, which will be for some overtime yet to be determined, probably in the IT department, possibly in planning. We met with Greg Potter. We met with Kathy Covert, who's going to be, her staff is going to be helping us do the clerical work here. What did I forget, Joe? I think that's what you'll be seeing next. Remember, we talked about this at budget. We didn't put any money in at budget time for this, but we recognized the fact that it was going to take some money to make this go.
Thank you. Is there anything else in your report?
I have nothing else tonight, unless there are any questions.
Okay. Anything for Mike? All right. Thank you very much, Mike. Really, again, congratulations.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, Frank.
Why don't you know you asked? Mike, we haven't had an update lately on the, and perhaps it's between you and Carol, on the road use.
Well, I think Carol mentioned
did
it.
Did you just, I beg your pardon, you did that. I'm sorry, I apologize.
I'm happy to repeat it either now or the break.
Fine.
That's why we have breaks when everybody goes we're, out
excuse
at the same
me.
Time.
We're sometimes other things take precedence, Martha.
All right. I think we will, before we start on the budget committee, let us take a five-minute break. Please be back here in 5 minutes. That's before 25 out. Thank you.